Our salary is between $100,000 and $720,000.
Don't just be like, this is the problem. If only we could do something about it.
Would you say that DevOps engineers actually do have skills and self-worth? Welcome back to this. This is the Wagner family reunion, February 2024.
Very much related.
I'm joined today by Travis Wagner. You want to say hi?
Hello.
Longtime friend of the pod. And then Robbie the Wagner. His last name's a little bit different, I guess. But Robbie the Wagner is also here.
No, I got a little beef with that.
Well, what so that Robbie Wagner exactly? was taken everywhere. Like, I couldn't consistently get Robbie Wagner on like GitHub, Twitter, all the things. So it was going to be the Robbie Wagner. And then co-host of my podcast, Chuck, was like, why don't you make it Robbie the Wagner? It's like a Robert the Bruce kind of like more hardcore, like do
so
that. I was like,
all
right.
All the Wagners though.
Yeah, it feels like you're trying to one up all of us.
The Robbie Wagner sounds, you know, is like the official Robbie Wagner. Yeah. Robbie the Wagner's like, you know, we don't even exist now.
Yeah, the official Wagners.
Well, my bad. Was not intended that way.
So this is the Wagner edition, the whiskey, web, and whatnot edition of Backend Banter. I don't have any whiskey. I did bring some brown sugar bourbon. Does that count?
Whiskey.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, bourbon is whiskey.
Awesome. Me and Robbie got our drinks. Okay, so this episode's going to be a little special. Robbie and Travis are going to answer my hot take style questions. And so I mean, I say we just get right into it.
Let's do it.
That's what everybody wants.
All right, Travis, starting with you, Elon Musk or Mark Zuckerberg? Who's your favorite tech CEO 2024?
I have to pick?
Oh, yeah.
Into my head, I have to choose. Let's go with Mark.
Uh-oh.
Just because, you know, I use Twitter on a daily basis. And, you know, it's just like, it's amazing how someone can so quickly go from like, one of the most influential, well, you know, not that he's not influential, but one of the most like respected intellectuals to, oh my God, maybe this guy is not very smart.
What about you, Robbie?
Oh man, it's a tough choice. Like, I think on character alone, it's got to be Zuckerberg. Like, neither of them are like the perfect person, but I just can't really side with Elon. I don't really have a ton of beef with him because, like, I have a Tesla. I use Twitter, whatever. Like, I'm not hating on him. I just
own every product he's ever released. You know,
I can't really be a champion anymore.
Yeah, I mean,
I was definitely more of an Elon Musk fan in 2017, and it's changed a lot in the last couple of years.
It's like all you had to do was like. Nothing.
All you had to do was stop tweeting, probably.
Yeah.
Not buy Twitter. Like, Jesus.
Yeah. Just, okay. You know, go on your interviews and do the thing.
Okay.
For minutes at a time and show everybody that you're very smart. Just so I can kind of like at least maybe respect a hot take I don't like. I feel like I need to get to know Robbie, you know, what you do.
I would say I'm a web developer, front end specifically. I've been using Ember for 12 years, so that's a pretty unpopular thing these days, but I'm going to keep using it until companies stop paying me to do it. So I work at Amazon. They acquired a company called Art19, which does podcast hosting. So I work on that platform, have my own podcast, Whiskey Web and whatnot. And I like Tailwind a lot. Big, big Tailwind and TypeScript fanboy. I don't know if those are questions that are coming up, but.
I've been doing some stalking of the Whiskey Web and whatnot podcast to make sure I get some good questions. So you've done like a FANG. Are you trying to complete the acronym? Because you've been at like three of the companies.
Yeah. I mean, the acronym kind of changes, so it's making it hard, but. Yeah, I've worked for Apple and Netflix as well. So I need to get Meta and what else? And Alphabet, I guess, or Google.
Oh, yeah, it's so not Google. So, yeah. So
yeah, it's like MANA.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, the acronym's not as cool as it used to be, unfortunately.
Yeah. You know, I know we just kind of, Robbie, we just became like Twitter friends relatively recently before this. But I work at Universal and I do web development there. Like, we do artist sites, and Universal owns other labels. And so we do their sites, and it's kind of getting them all like on this global platform. So they're not using Drupal and WordPress and whatever. Not that I don't love WordPress.
Shots fired.
Yeah. No. Like you said, so like I used to be a WordPress developer, and then I was doing like PHP, and I was like top rated on Upwork. I don't know if it's like specifically for PHP or what, but like I was like, man, these people are gonna pay me how much? and people are still shitting on WordPress. I'm like, fine, I don't care if they shit on it. I will absolutely do this.
Yeah, COBOL pays a lot.
Yeah.
Fortran just like jumped 23 spaces or something on the TOB index this year. Did you see that?
Oh, wow.
Now, for some reason, I don't look much at that.
For some reason, I don't look at the TOB because it's dumb. Yeah, that's a good point. But like it jumped from like, yeah, like place like 25 to like 11.
In popularity, though?
According to whoever takes that survey, whoever does that data. I cannot believe that you just introduced yourself as working at Universal and not as the founder of Crabling. Can you imagine?
Well, you know, he said he works at Amazon, you know, so I was like, you know, I also understand corporate life, you know, so we can like...
I also understand The Office.
Yeah, we can commiserate later.
Yeah.
That actually brings me to like, yeah, one of my other questions, which is big company, small company. Where would you rather work? Maybe Travis, take this one first.
You know, they both have their benefits, obviously. Like the stability that comes with Universal is really hard to beat. I know it'll be there. It's not going anywhere. But
just like Blockbuster. It's never going anywhere.
I personally think that like, you know, it's something that you should kind of cycle on and off. Like, you know, it'll wear on you if you do it for too long, and you'll kind of forget that like move fast, break things mentality, and like that perspective of whole other software building perspective, because the ship turns very slowly in corporations. And not to mention that in like a startup, you're going to be using most likely going to be using a lot newer technologies and be able to stay up to date there too. So, I mean, and then on the other hand, if you don't work at these large corporations, there are certain things you will never probably do. Like there's just a scale you will never realize. Like, and some of the solutions you have, you know, that I see, I'm like, that will never work for 5,000 instances, you know, but they're not worried about that.
Yeah.
You know, so both is a bad answer. I guess, you know, startups are great. You know, I'm bitter.
Yeah, none of the startups I've really worked at have worked out, except for this one. But yeah. Aside from that, it's been pretty rough. What about you, Robbie? You seem to be a slave of corporate America. What do you think?
Well, so I think it depends on what you're optimizing for, because if you want the most cash, then really kind of neither is the best option. And it's a very nuanced answer. Let me give a threefold answer here.
Neither.
Yeah. The thing that worked the best for me, I ran my own company for 7 years and we ran out of work. So maybe don't listen to me. But during that time, working for like medium companies, like, you know, you've figured your stuff out, you've got funding and you're still malleable and you don't have as much process as like a, you know, FANG company, is like the sweet spot, because they can pay you well. You can like make a big difference. Like, I think that's good. If you're just not running a consultancy and want a job, I think it depends on, do you want to enjoy work or do you want to make a lot of money? And then also like, what do you enjoy? Like it's very person dependent, because there's so much process at FANG companies. Like, well, not all of them actually, it depends still, but usually there's a lot of process. And if you want to sit in meetings all day and get a lot of approvals to do anything, but make a lot of money and that sounds good, then cool. If you want to like ship a lot of code really fast and have like autonomy and learn new stuff, probably a startup.
Makes sense.
I could agree with that.
I like to say that I don't like working at big companies, but I've never actually worked at one. So I think I'm just a little jaded. Like, Microsoft, it's not that you won't hire me. It's like, I don't want to come to you.
Yeah. You don't fire me. I quit. Yeah. But, you know, I think going with that cycling thing is like, if you can, you know, especially for younger people, especially if you don't have a family, it makes a huge difference. But like, if you can cycle between like making a ton of cash and then not making yourself miserable for long periods of time, you know, but accepting that, you know, those kind of periods of time, then I think that software developers have an advantage where, moving around year or 2 years between jobs isn't really, it's not as near as frowned upon, or it's more expected at least. So, you know, cycling between those so you don't get, you get the cash and then you don't get miserable.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think my average tenure at a company has been like 18 months.
Yeah. That's higher than my average.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't expect that from the corporate man.
Well, he has been at all the.
Yeah. I contracted at Apple and Netflix, so that didn't really count. My like jobs before my own company, I moved every year because every year you get a new job and you get 25% more money. Why would you not move every year?
Like, yeah, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
you know, if they want to make a stay and feel like part of the family, then you gotta incentivize it. Otherwise, it's just there's way too much incentive. Yeah. To get poached by someone else.
Yeah. And they don't like, nobody wants to spend the money to keep good employees. But then if you threaten to leave, they magically find money. Like, yeah. Oh, no, we can give you more money. Here you go. Oh, well, where was that when I asked for it last month? Like,
crazy how that works.
Yep.
Yeah.
Especially in the market of like 2019, 2020, 2021. I actually don't know if that's still the case as much in 2023 and 2024. Maybe it is.
It's less the case. Yeah. It's a tough market right now.
Yeah, I mean, especially for like mid-level. It's hard to say it's a tough market as, you know, a senior plus developer with 20 years of experience. It's like, what advice would you give me? I'm like, have 20 years of experience.
Could you just be a senior developer? It's actually pretty easy once you get
exactly.
Here.
Idiot. Yeah, exactly.
Have you tried just doing better? Yeah.
You know, but it's like the pathway is so much different than it was. And like, I'm like, I started building video games in 2004. I wouldn't recommend you, like, if you're trying to like get a job and make money or be in my position now, like, that's just not, I can't wholeheartedly tell someone that with a straight face. Just start coding for fun. Make MySpace templates or something.
Oh man, I loved making MySpace templates. So fun.
So Robbie, next question. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. You've not yet been to Google, right?
Mm-mm, no.
What about Microsoft? Did you do Microsoft?
Nope.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so Steve Ballmer was the CEO of Microsoft in kind of the early 2000s. Famously, like, Microsoft kind of sucked. Sundar Pichai is the CEO of Google today. My assertion is that Google kind of sucks right now. My question is, who would you pick for your team, Ballmer or Pichai?
Well, solely on the Ballmer peak, you got to go with Ballmer.
Like, because of the dance moves?
No, the Ballmer peak where you drink, like the XKCD comic. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah, okay.
It's like if you drink a few drinks, you hit like your peak coding level. It's like, yeah. So like solely for that, I think cool guy.
Yep, yep. I mean, you know, Ballmer 100%. It's just like that energy can't be matched. You cannot match Ballmer's energy. Not to mention that he's just like, he's going to make the most mundane thing seem just so badass.
Like developers?
Like email.
Yeah, I think I'm with you guys. Like, I think both of them like fumbled the ball respectively, but Ballmer did it with so much more style.
That's, yeah.
Yeah,
that's
which it. Counts. Yeah.
And yeah, I think there's a lot of points for that.
Okay, Travis, then let's move over to you. Amazon Web Services or Google Cloud Platform?
Jesus Christ. Probably AWS, just because like a lot of great things built on top of it. And because Robbie's right over there, I'm not going to like getting his lunch right now.
Yeah. No, this is the perfect time. He's here.
Yeah, you know, it's like Microsoft in that you're probably using it whether or not you know it. You know, the hands are in everything, and a lot of great things are built on it. I mean,
like GCP. Who's to say, like, it's not built on AWS?
Like, a lot of great things. I really like what like Dax is doing with SST. I think also it has the edge because it's the only one I've ever really tried to like wrap my head around. I don't feel like you're like, I'm gonna learn GCP and Azure and AWS. I like, that is just, you got to pick one, you got to pick a lane. And I already picked my lane.
I have learned both. I have not picked a lane. What? I'm a both enjoyer.
I got to say, I did learn some GCP. It's not that hard. it's not as difficult as AWS. So I will give it.
I would argue it's quite a bit easier, actually.
Yeah. Well, the things I did were quite a bit easier, but that wasn't like super deep dive stuff. I've done, you know, really some really complex things with AWS. So I can't like, you know.
Yeah. You like set up DNS. You like deployed an EC2 instance. Like you've been around the block.
I've done it all. You know, but we use like a Kubernetes cluster with AWS instances and it's just, you know, it's very complex. And so like I never had a reason to do that in GCP yet. So,
okay. So actually I gotta stop. Like that is the one thing I tend to be fairly agnostic, but if you're doing Kubernetes, GCP experience with Kubernetes in my experience is way better.
Really?
They have this thing called autopilot where basically you say, hey, GCP, give me a Kubernetes. And then it like gives you a Kubernetes. And you just get to like worry about the pods and like the you get to worry about everything at the pod level. You don't have to worry That's about awesome. The node level, basically.
Well, you know, maybe we'll have to do a round three after I give it a good whirl.
You actually try it. Yeah. What about you, Robbie?
I've tried it.
Yeah, I don't really do anything but front end, so I'm not the person to ask. That being said, my hot take is configuring like any kind of cloud services is not that hard and DevOps is not real. So I would say like whatever you want, because it's not that hard.
I spared you, man.
Okay, so DevOps is not real. Does that apply at like the pretty fundamental? Here's the problem. Okay, I'm going to go way off script with all the questions I had, and we're going to focus on this for a second. When you say DevOps isn't real, is that like when DevOps equals like infrastructure as a job? Like that's what's not real?
Yeah. Like knowing the buttons to press in an AWS console to make things work, I feel like does require expertise, don't get me wrong, but it's like you can learn that without needing to know how code works or like how what you're doing. Like you can just be like click, 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 and anyone given enough time can learn it, is what I'm trying to say.
Given enough time, anyone can learn most things. Well, you know, pianos are just a bunch of keys, the buttons to press.
That's very true.
And you know, someone, it's less about like just memorizing what buttons to press and knowing how the code that is going to be written or has been written is going to be affected by the button you press. And that's where I think, you know, not to mention, you know, this is a very small part of DevOps in a very particular kind of system with like microservices and AWS or something, you know, not to mention that like things like, you know, like SST or CDK, you're actually doing infrastructure as code. And you can do more complex things. I think that if your DevOps team isn't doing that, then yeah, they're not real.
In opposition to what Robbie said, Travis, would you say that DevOps engineers actually do have skills and self-worth?
I would argue maybe more than most. You know, I've personally seen, because there's two kinds of DevOps, like. That's the problem. There is just like kind of the AWS, you know, setting up instances, clicking the scale button. I get that. But then there's also like the pipeline, which is like the back end senior DevOps kind of pipeline where it seems to be where a lot of people end up because they understand the systems more than most. They understand the bigger picture and how the code is fitting into that more than most.
Yeah. Yeah. To be fair, I'm not saying they don't have self-worth or skills or whatever you said, but
I think value is humans.
It does depend on the scale. It's like, you know, some places I feel like hire a specific DevOps person who only is just clicking a couple buttons. Now there are a lot of people that do a lot more than that. And like, as soon as you say Kubernetes, I'm going to just like eyes glaze over and
Kubernetes.
Like, yeah. So I'm just like, I have respect for like the things that are done. I just think that a lot of it, like the term is too broad and we don't like.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with that. I mean, DevOps also covers like, anything GitHub Actions related. It also covers like making custom scripts for deployments and migrations and so many things. Like it could just be, you know, a lot of what I do is dev tooling and like part of making the DX better for teams. And, you know, so if that ever like touches the internet, it's like becomes DevOps.
Speaking of fake jobs, Travis, would you rather be a dev rel or a scrum master?
Oh, Christ. Gun to my head, I guess I'm going to go dev rel just because there's saving yourself at the end of the day. Once you like get done with the fantasy, you can go back to doing useful things and people might actually like you.
As opposed to Scrum Master, which is unilaterally disliked. Is that your assertion?
Well, the problem with Scrum Master is that Scrum is hated. And the word master
has are they a Scrum main now?
Yeah, Scrum main.
Resulted in the biggest Git migration of all time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Scrum main sounds like it's like you playing League of Legends. You're like, I main Scrum. I'm a Scrum main. You know, but nobody likes Scrum. Nobody likes, you know, and also I think there's the boundaries thing, you know, with Scrum Masters. It's like their job isn't to corral developers, but it seems to be what it always involves. And it's just like, it puts you in a position where even if you're good at your job, people aren't going to like you. And you're not the boss of them. So it's not a situation where you're like, oh, they don't like me, but it's okay. Like, they don't have to like me. I'm their boss. No, you're just part of the team.
Just the scapegoat just that the everyone worst hates. Position to be.
Yeah, so I sympathize a little bit. You know, I'll go DevRel just because, like, in theory, it sounds super fun. And like, if you actually had a product or like a startup or something that you really, really were passionate about, you could really lean into that. And like, in theory, it's just a great job. Like, you just get to talk to developers and convince community and see their problems, work with, you know, the developers and the company. And like, I think that's what they hypothetically do. That's I don't really know what a DevRel does.
Yeah. Does anyone?
Googling DevRel.
I've definitely heard different things. I had Dev on from, he's a DevRel at Clerk. And yeah, like according to him, it was like documentation and like making videos. It was like a lot of education. So there's like a lot of coding involved, but it's like, you know, you're coding up like demos and samples and like tutorials.
Yeah, I think if you actually like the product or like what it is enough, then that's great. You know, like many things, they can be seen as like shills and spokespeople sometimes, like just there to always defend every comment on Twitter or something.
Yeah. What about you, Robbie? Would you rather be a Scrum Master or a DevRel?
Oh, definitely DevRel. Yeah, I feel like Scrum has been detrimental to software development. Now, when I say Scrum, I don't mean Agile. Agile methodologies are okay on some level. You can do, you know, some planning, breaking down things, not doing waterfall, because like, you know, building a feature for 8 months and then shipping it without ever shipping little pieces or getting it tested is not smart. Yeah, so I don't like Scrum. And yeah, DevRel sounds kind of cool. Like, I'd like to make content for a living and like have it also get to do some coding, you know, not just have to code like feature work all day, more like helping developers succeed and stuff. What's the difference between a DevRel and a dev advocate? I always have that question.
Yeah, and I guess like, that's where I was. I think DevRel is more involved with like specific content, like demoing the product, and like they can code, right? I mean, like that's the biggest thing. They do documentation, you said. So like,
developer advocate sounds more fake to me. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, as if we like need representation in Congress or something. I don't know.
No. Developer advocates just like, you know, say you're Clerk or say you're some, you know, making a new auth product and you need to convince people of its value. You know, you need to get this word out. They're just your street.
Oh,
team.
You're an advocate to developers, not for developers.
Yes.
Is that?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. You're a developer advocate. You're advocating for developer product.
That makes perfect sense. Yeah. You're essentially, I mean, you could almost reduce it like to essentially you're like a marketer to developers. Like you market to developers, right?
I think, yeah, I think it's got more, a developer advocate kind of has more of like a street team vibe to it, you know, instead of like traditional marketing.
It's rebranding, but I can get behind it. I joke about all of this because I am effectively a DevRel at this point in my career. So I feel like I'm allowed to make fun of it. Robbie, VR or AI, which one do you see being more impactful on your day-to-day as a developer? VR platform, AI products.
Does VR include AR?
Yeah.
Then I would say that. Like, I think the Vision Pro and, like theoretically being able to delete everything off my desk and just, like, have a thing on my face, type into nothing, and it, like, figures out what I'm typing. That sounds nice. Like, AI, I am skeptical on. I've used it a few times for things. I don't use Copilot. I don't use ChatGPT that much. The only thing I use it for is like image generation for the podcast, which is just fun to play with. But I think we're a long way from it being super beneficial to like specific senior developer level tasks.
You ominously said senior developer there.
Well, you can tell it like, make me a basic React app that does XYZ and it'll do it and it'll probably work, but it probably is a bunch of stuff you don't want, you know?
That makes sense. Like the skills you're saying, the skills that are more valuable are going to be like the almost like the higher level architecture, making sure you're gluing things together properly using,
yeah, like DevOps.
Yeah, something like that.
Travis, what do you think? VR, AR, AI?
VR, and VR is worthless. AR's got some definite use cases. Like when I say worthless, obviously like video game consoles are worthless. There's nothing, you know, like nothing bad about a great one existing. And I would love to play games and stuff, you know, so it's not like, you know, like art is worthless, you know, as far as increasing my productivity. It's great. You know, I still make music, but AI is like, first of all, I think it's miles ahead of what Robbie thinks it is. And, you know, like, can you go ask ChatGPT right now to make you a production ready React app that is as good as you're going to make? Not anywhere close. But that's not really pushing the edge right there. You're taking away a huge part of the prompt engineering and like fine tuning to make it, you know, feeding it, doing few shot examples instead of like just the zero shot that you're feeding into ChatGPT or something, where you can get results that are remarkably similar to what you would actually make, following your code style, your standards. And especially as we get things with huge context windows, as long as we can get the fine tuning right and things like that and get it to still be following directions, then like having the repo and having it be able to have your whole repo as context at once and all your code guidelines feed, you know, like whatever you're feeding it, your code style, everything, it's going to be a remarkable game changer for like keeping everybody on the same path with best practices instead of static analysis and having to make specific rules for every single small detail that your company wants to enforce. You can just have, you know, have these PRs with AI analyzing it. And it's, I think that's really going to change the game there. Like, especially at finding things that static analysis isn't really great at finding, but a person can easily identify an anti-pattern or something.
I think AI is going to pretty drastically change like what good UX means in web apps. In the sense that like right now, let me give an example from BootDev. We have like a way to submit feedback about a lesson, a way to ask for help about a lesson. And those are like two different buttons in the UI. And we're talking about like how easy it would actually be to just like give you a text box and just like type what you want. And like, based on what you type, it's like pretty easy to categorize that as you asking for help or you saying like something's broken and just like sending it to the right place. One thing I'm pretty interested to see is like how it changes essentially like input forms on websites. And if it's used well, I think it'll have a pretty big impact there. Robbie, I was really interested to hear your take on like, so do you see yourself within the next 5 years, like coding with goggles on your face and like tapping on your desk?
I would say, yeah, probably. I mean, I haven't bought the Vision Pro myself, but I would have to say like it has to be pretty light and like comfortable is like the biggest blocker, I feel like, to it being like mass adopted. And I think one day you won't have any devices. It'll just be like thing on your face. Like there's no TVs in your living room. There's no speakers. There's no anything. Just everyone's plugged in on their face all the time.
Yeah, I disagree. I think it's going to be, you know, the neural implants are just Neuralink gonna bypass first. That entirely.
Well, that's they could do that, yeah.
It's not called Neuralink necessarily.
Yeah, maybe a different one. Yeah,
TMCR.
If that were the case, yeah, but still, like, you know, if you just tap on your desk, that doesn't feel good. And tapping in the air is like not having tactile feedback. I don't even like listening to music for long periods of time with headphones on. You know, so having something on my face for hours at a time, like unless it was just my glasses, that'd be a different thing. I do see like the AR being able to like extend your monitors and things like that while at your desk and using your keyboard, you know, great things there with that. Being able to get up, go to the living room real quick and still be like on the call or able to type if you need to. Like there are obviously very cool applications that can be done there as far as, you know, and I'm just talking about like productivity work things, because I think that's like what Apple's kind of trying to sell versus like the Meta Quest, is that, you know, they're trying to do this whole, like, whole productivity thing. I don't think it's there yet, but I mean, I've never owned a VR headset, so.
What? Why did I even invite you on? To me, like, so I have a Quest 2. I also have not yet tried the Apple Vision Pro or the Quest 3. I definitely want to try the Quest 3. It's cheaper and I won't have to drop like $4,000 to try it. But it feels to me kind of like the Zune or like the BlackBerry days of like media players, as opposed to like the iPod. People are like trying to compare some of these new VR platforms to like the iPod or even the iPhone as like paradigm shifts. I'm with you, Travis. I feel like we'd have to see it like in the form factor of glasses for me to be on board with that kind of a, you know, assertion.
Yeah, it'd have to be much smaller. And like, I see it very, you know, I feel this is a dangerous thing to say because people said similar things about the iPhone, but it feels very much like a novelty at this point. And I don't, you know, as much as I could see the use case, it just, this form factor doesn't appeal to me at all.
Which of the major tech companies right now, I'll go to you, Robbie, on this. Which of the major tech companies can't answer Amazon because you work there? Apart from Amazon, which one sucks the least? Like, which one's actually doing well in the eyes of developers? Can't pick Amazon.
Well, I mean, I guess it also depends on your criteria for this. But my criteria is going to be who did well during this last, let's just lay everyone off and be shitty companies. And Apple pretty much didn't lay anyone off. They also have like frozen hiring and like you can't work there anymore. But like they've been good to their employees. And
well, that's
like
how it should be. If they're going to be laying people off, you know, better to do that than to hire, keep hiring until you get to a point, a breaking point where you have to lay, you know, 1,000 people off.
Yeah, so I think Apple's been good to their employees, and I'm always been an Apple fanboy, really, too. So, you know, I like Apple products.
It's all coming together.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would say Apple is probably one of the, well, yeah, yeah.
Also, the only one wearing a beanie on this podcast. So,
just noted, you know.
there's a story behind the always wearing a hat. It's because I have to go to the office now and I have to go early before traffic exists. So I never shower in the morning. I just throw a hat on and go to work. And like, that's why.
I don't shower either, but
that's just like a, it's just like a, yeah. It's just like a lifestyle choice.
Yeah.
You don't have to wear a hat is all I'm saying.
What about you, Travis? Which tech company is doing the least bad?
Okay, well, you got Meta, Amazon, Apple, Alphabet, and Netflix. Yeah, I think that's all of them. I would probably say Netflix. Just seems the least turbulent. Like, it seems the fang that least people care least about. The least fang-like. And I think that makes it the best fang.
I mean, it's built on top of Amazon, or at least it was at some point, right? So
yeah, so how can it be its own thing?
I don't get why we put it in the category with the rest of them.
So I think being the least fang like makes it the best fang.
They do have a good culture, and like all their job postings are like, our salary is between $100,000 and $720,000. It's just based on like what you can convince us to pay you. And it's like, what? It's
like, just based on your negotiation skills.
Well, no, it's like, it says it's like based on where you are in your life.
I'm at a place in my life where I need $720,000.
Yep. Yeah.
I don't know if this is an unpopular opinion. I'm going to go Microsoft on this one. I feel like they definitely have a bunch of products that I hate.
We'll never know why.
We will never know.
I hate Azure so much. Office 365 is a dumpster fire. Like, there's a bunch of crap I hate. But, like, I'm a big fan of what they've done recently with WSL. I think they've done a good job with VS Code. They haven't... GitHub has not nearly been the disaster that people expected it to be when it was acquired. I don't know if you guys remember that. It was like, oh, Microsoft acquired GitHub. Like, let's all move to GitLab. Well, it turns out, in my opinion, GitHub's still way better than GitLab.
I would say that's more due to individuals, you know, like same thing with like Copilot. You know, Microsoft gets a lot of props for Copilot, but that was the work of, you know, some very talented and very dedicated individuals who had started doing those things many, many years ago. And my thing with Microsoft is like, I don't avoid it anymore. I use VS Code. You know, I've used it for work, and I just recently switched to just, you know, not switching to NeoVim on my personal computer. Because it's like, you know, just the mental tax of it was starting to be like, you know, I was working a lot of hours. And so like the more hours I worked, the harder it got to be to switch to NeoVim. So, and I just, you know, I just accepted it. You know, they're on the Linux Foundation as a platinum member. They own VS Code. They own GitHub, where all of the code is located. Like, where do, you can try to run. You can try to hide.
They own NPM, and
yeah, you're not gonna get away from it.
Yeah, everything I can play games on, they own. Like,
yeah,
it's fine. Just, I don't mind it anymore.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, I for one welcome our new Microsoft overlords.
Microsoft, if you're listening, we're friendly to you on this podcast. Okay, fair enough. Cool. You're getting hired at a startup. Let's start with you, Travis. Getting hired at a startup. And you have two levers. You can maximize salary with like less equity, or you can do more equity and less salary. What do you choose?
Yeah, that's really difficult because in my situation specifically, like I have a family, you know, so I need hard cash, you know, but I'm going to lean towards equity just because I think if you're working at a startup, then you need FIRE. And I think that if your income is somewhat driven by the success of that company, you're going to have that FIRE. You're going to be advocating for the company. You're going to be the dev rel and the dev advocate. Like, people don't like to admit it, I think, but having a physical, that tangible incentive is going to make you do more. It's going to, you know, put that FIRE under your ass to really like make the company better. You have personal incentive to make sure the company succeeds, which is the most difficult thing to get employees to do, is care, you know, and I'll say, if you want them to care, incentivize them to care. Don't try to make them your family. Give them money. You know, we need less pizza parties, more equity, you know, and I think even in big companies, you're rooting for the company if you have equity.
What about you, Robbie?
Yeah, I think it depends, because if like equity, it's always been my stance that equity is kind of fake. And like, you can just get diluted to zero. So it's like, it's worth nothing. And it's a way to, for you to pay me less right now with the promise of paying me more later. And then later comes and I get like $5. And like, it's not worth doing, in my opinion. I'd rather have the money now and invest it how I please. That being said, if there's some kind of clause in there that's like, you're going to own 20% of the company and that's not going to change, we're like, when we dilute, we'll keep you at 20% or whatever, then it's like, yes, I will take that. Because that means like I'm very motivated to like make this worth a lot, because I will get a ton of money if this does well.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. Like your shares mean absolute shit to me.
one question I have, Robbie, because again, I've never worked at Fang. Have your compensation packages at Fang always included some? I know equity at large companies, public companies, is very different than at startups. But is there equity in that compensation package?
Well, I just had contract money at Apple and Netflix, but at Amazon, yeah, there's RSUs. So it's like you have a signing bonus for 2 years, and then the next 2 years you get RSUs. And then I think you're just supposed to get more and more RSUs as you go, like based on your performance or whatever. And I think I read in Netflix's like that same job post that was like 100 to 720,000 or whatever said, you can take as much or as little in stock as you want. Like you decide how much is stock and how much is cash. I think that's a really cool way to do it.
Cause like at an early stage startup, yeah, options, or even if you're getting hard equity, which is weird, you usually get options, but it's very much like a lottery ticket in the sense that, you know, there's maybe a 1 in 10 chance of the company selling or going public at some point. And I'd actually argue that dilution is not the main problem. I'd argue the main problem is the company like failing, yeah. just like outright.
Dissolving.
Sure.
Yeah. Just like running out of money or like not finding product market fit. Yeah. It's like the real zero. But then like, obviously the payout's really good if they do make it. I would assume at a company like Amazon, I mean, RSUs, like they're pretty, like we know what they're worth. We can go check the stock ticker. Do you look at it very differently?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just like a piece of salary at that point, because as soon as you've got it, you can sell it. And like, it's just the same as getting cash. You might want to hold it if you think the stock's going to go up, but like there's no requirement to hold a certain amount or anything.
But I think what you were saying, Lane, about, you know, the biggest risk is a company failing. But if you give them the percentage of your company, then maybe you are less likely to fail if you've got everybody really working and rooting for you.
Yeah, that's my philosophy. It's all of a sudden like not cool at all to quote Sam Altman because of the OpenAI stuff. But like he was the like Y Combinator poster boy, like after Paul Graham, right? And yeah, like his stance was always you want to be like super generous with equity in a startup, because that's, like you said, that's in theory the thing you want your employees to have, because it's the better motivator to like have a good outcome for the company. You don't want corporate men at your startup, you know, people that have been to like three of the fine FANG companies. Like, okay, is blockchain gone yet, Robbie?
It's always been gone. It was a fad for like a second, and I bought into the fad and wasted a ton of money on it, but I think the only thing it's useful for, the things I've heard, are like for a mortgage or something, like a deed to your house. I mean, like these are the things I've like done to the house. Like I put a new roof on, and that's part of like a immutable record that like anytime you buy the house, you just get this like NFT basically that like tells you all this stuff. Like that kind of application I think is interesting. But I think like as art and trading cards and all this crap we tried to do, it's like, That's not going to work anymore.
Travis?
I don't know. Bitcoin's worth $50,000 or something. It's hard to say it's nothing, you know.
I mean, it's not. Worthless. It's objectively not worthless at the moment. Yeah.
You know, I think its future is, we keep saying its future is in its application. But I bought it 10 years ago. It came out like 6 years before that. You know, at what point it's like, oh, it's just a commodity. You're just waiting for it to go up and down. But I mean, like, it seems to be doing it for a long period of time. Is it like valuable? Does it have purpose? I don't know. Buying drugs on the internet seemed to be a good sell for it. I don't know how well we could do that, you know, anymore. Blockchain in general, I see why the concept is useful. For things like Robbie was saying, but I also like, you know, like my brother was working for this, or doing, had a client, and they were like tracking like where shellfish came from, like seafood, the seafood they were shipping came from using blockchain. I think is mostly just like a, because it's hot kind of thing. You could do that with a lot of different ways.
It's a great way to raise money. Yeah.
Yeah. you know, but like, there are principles to cryptocurrency and blockchain, and like especially, you know, the usefulness comes from like Ethereum actually having a platform that you can, you know, develop on, use Ethereum platform to build with. But I think outside of all of that usefulness potential is the underlying fact that it is so tainted by scams and garbage that it's going to need a complete rebrand for anything to come of it again. That's just like in its current state, fuck no. I stay all the way away from it. I don't want to be anywhere near it. And I made probably I made a decent amount of cash on Ethereum. I even made a good amount of money on Dogecoin. I am out.
And if the IRS is listening, by good amount, Travi means less than any amount that would be deemed taxable.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would say probably just under that amount.
Yeah. And then it was actually lost, so can't even be used anymore.
Yeah, someone actually hacked my MetaMask wallet.
The whole tax situation is a shit show, though. It's like, if you like move it, it's like, oh, that's a taxable event or whatever. I guess maybe you have to sell it, like transfer it to a different currency. I don't know the rules. It seems like anytime I move it at all, it's like, oh, you got to pay taxes on that. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I just moved it.
Yeah, well, there's all this other stuff, like, you know, the gas fees and like, you know, it's like they've embraced this different world instead of trying to simplify it. Because for a long time, it was like, how can we, you know, break this down into simple terms and get everybody into it? And now they're just like, you know, just full scam mode.
So my take is like, big problems with scams, big problems with like pump and dumps, like all the things we all know about. I actually do think that, like, just to take Bitcoin as like the flagship one, the idea of digital money that's like borderless and you can like send anywhere seems pretty useful. Like the amount of times I get people in Iran or Russia asking if they can buy Boudev accounts with Bitcoin, like the reason they're doing that is because there's sanctions, right? And they're not allowed to purchase stuff through Stripe, but they want to do it with Bitcoin. And of course, like I can't do it. It's like way too complex. I don't even know if it's legal for me to do that. But like there's value there, I think, in like this like autonomous digital system that clearly, you know, the verification works. It seems to be really hard to game that system. I don't even know if I'd go so far as to say like the mortgage stuff that you were talking about, Robbie, will work simply because it seems to me to defeat the purpose of the blockchain in the first place, which is like somebody has to rubber stamp the transaction. Somebody has to say, yes, Robbie, you actually did purchase this mortgage and like put it on the blockchain, which means at some point you're trusting somebody.
It would need to be part of like a whole network of coin that was based around this, like that had every mortgage verified, you know, with that currency, just like any other. It would have to be its own like token or whatever. But I agree with you. The like utopia of crypto is like this borderless. And obviously that means governments are going to push back on it. It does offer some freedom financially and for countries with like oppressive, you know, systems. Like I don't think it is as infallible as you're saying. We've seen, you know, incredible hacks. We've seen, you know, beyond scams, just these vulnerabilities happen and people just lose $1 billion. You know, it's just
let me correct the record if I said it incorrectly. Yeah, I definitely don't think these are like unhackable systems in the sense like you can get into somebody's MetaMask wallet.
Yeah, just this morning my MetaMask wallet was hacked.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is I'm very skeptical of like Bitcoin being able to like overtake the world financial industry like the predictions were, you know, a decade ago, or I'm sure people are still making those predictions. I'm just saying I think there's like a niche use case for this kind of money.
No, I think there's like there's cases there's, and we've seen like some smaller countries and stuff like wanting to adopt, you know, a cryptocurrency or Bitcoin or something. It provides them a, you know, a more stable, because Bitcoin is more stable than some countries' currency. And, you know, I think there is a cool case for that to, you know, give countries that need a platform like that the platform.
My hope is just that we could really put like the monkey JPEGs and stuff behind us. Like, is anyone still on that bandwagon? Like, that's dead, right?
I don't know, man. It's just like,
I think it's still one of the like biggest ones, but it's way less valuable than it was.
So there is something cool there too. There, the NFT, but again, all of this cool stuff is going to need a total rebrand because it's so tainted. It's not just a little bit, you know, but there is a cool thing there, like getting an NFT or something. And then it's not just art that you have a digital receipt of, but it also like gets you in a concert or something or an event, you know, IRL or online, I guess would be fine too. You know, but there is something tied to it and that like gives it associated value. And then there's also like nobody else can fake that concert ticket. There's a value there. But again, we're so far detached from that. I don't want to call it cool factor because I didn't get that. But I guess that's what, clout for it. And we just need that. It just all needs to completely go away. The whole thing needs rebranded before we can do anything useful with it.
Yeah, there's a whiskey company called Prime Barrel that they do like barrel picks and stuff, and they have a whiskey club that's an NFT. Like, that's pretty cool because then you can, like, at any point you can, there's a finite number of them, and you can sell your membership so someone else can have access to the club. So it's like an asset for you versus just being like a picture.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. And I could definitely be wrong here. The thing I'm yet to be convinced on in terms of the practicality of that is, like, they could just have like a web portal, an old-fashioned web 2.0 portal where you buy a membership and like can gift the membership.
Yeah, no.
Because it's essentially the same like trust framework from like a really high level. I guess there's like an argument to be made about like they don't have to build the all the stuff around trading the actual valuable thing, the membership. Like, they wouldn't have to build it from scratch because once you integrate with like the Ethereum blockchain,
you could trade it
like
outside of their platform.
I see that. I'm just skeptical of how valuable it is.
Yeah, I think that, in the terms of like a concert ticket, anything that could normally be counterfeited, like a concert ticket, that it has some value there, to prevent that kind of thing. But yeah, again, it's like, okay, there's a use case, but all the bad stuff does not, the overall net is not positive.
it's a lot of overhead to get that utility for sure. All right, I've got just a couple more questions. So Robbie, you're starting over from scratch, learning to code. You get to choose between having a CS degree or being the maintainer of an open source project that has 1,000 stars on GitHub. And just like for the sake of argument, we'll assume that they're like legitimate stars. You didn't buy them.
Yeah, I would pick the GitHub repo, I think, because I have a CS degree and I use none of it. It is not helpful for web development, at least on the front end. Like, I'm not like, oh, let me like center this div with some combinatorics real quick. Like, I don't need that shit. So it's like, I think it depends on what you're doing, but if you're heavy on like you want to build web applications, I think it's pretty safe to not have the CS degree.
Makes sense to me. Travis?
I don't have a CS degree. I have a music degree, and my web development career has not suffered from not having a CS degree. I think that my later career has benefited from having a degree, just because it shows that you can start something and you can finish it. That's the biggest thing. You can handle structure and you can handle deadlines. There's a lot of things that come with getting a degree that companies view as valuable, even if it's not in your field. I don't necessarily agree with that, but it's the way that it is. I would say that I would prefer, if I would go back right now, I would say having a CS degree is a good idea. Of course, depending on what you want to get into, but as far as getting a job, I think it's going to help you more than having a decently popular GitHub or open source project.
And is that because all of the stars on the crabling repo were purchased?
There were none. Zero stars were purchased, for the record.
So currently sitting at 5,100 stars.
I'm just saying, I haven't really seen crabling propel my career forward as much as I thought I would have.
Do you think if it weren't just a shell script that it would
have? Might I agree to this?
Just invite it on to be slandered.
I think having a degree is a CS degree specifically. Like, it depends what you want to go into. But as someone who got into back end later, and like has gone further down the stack during my career, I wish I had a CS degree now. like now that I'm doing like bit manipulation and like building operating system and like learning a bunch of low level concepts, learning about paging and memory paging and like, just things that I never had was exposed to. You can't know what you don't know. And I think that, because you can figure out front end and like go up the stack relatively easier, then I would say having a CS degree would be where I would start. You don't need it, But
yeah, yeah. You said like it's, you know, you kind of wish you had one to understand it. Is it about the knowledge? Like, do you wish you had the knowledge that a CS degree would have provided? Like those unknown unknowns that like maybe you don't seek out on your own? Or is it about the rubber stamp?
That's 100. Well, for me, it's just the knowledge. It's just the unknown unknowns. It's just what don't I know? And what are those topics? You know, you can't look up something you don't know to look up. So for me, it's that. For somebody, if, you know, starting out these days, the rubber stamp is just as important. And if you're interested in computer science, you might as well get it in that. Because I'll tell you what, my music degree at least is worthless. So, and obviously it just depends on what you're into. But the rubber stamp matters more for people starting out than it does for me. That's why I think boot devs doing cool stuff is just like, you know, having, however you can get it, having those ways to learn that are, they give you the list of things, they give you the things you're going to learn. So then you can Google them later. You know, there's a wealth of knowledge out there, but you have to know what to look for.
Last question for today. We'll start with you, Travis, this time. Remote or on-site? And if remote, what would it take for you to go on site?
Yeah, so obviously, you know, remote, because you're leading, you know, if you have to, you know, add that little
I assume tail there. Yeah.
The company matters, the company culture matters so much in whether or not remote can be effective. And I've been at companies where their remote teams weren't effective, and it's frustrating as hell. And I just wish I could get everybody in a room for a little while, but that was the problem with that company. And I've worked on very successful async teams remotely. And that's the way to go. I've got kids, I got a wife, you know, I got a toddler running around. I don't want to miss her growing up, but you're driving 2 hours to commute somewhere. There is no way in hell I am going into the office every single day. That said, I will go. I'll go. Like if there's a big thing, or we're training somebody, or like we're training a new team or onboarding team or kicking off a project, there are reasons and there are scenarios where on-site, you know, is better. In office is better. And I'm all for that. It would take significant amount more money.
Would you do it for double?
I would do it for 1.75. Lowest I'm going. 1.75 times. I mean, 1.75 million.
Do you think that attitude like has been shaped from COVID? Like, for example, when I started working as a programmer, like I was just on site and I didn't know anything different. And it was just like, this is the way it is. Now that, like, you know, COVID, everyone's been remote, like similarly, like, yeah, you'd have to pay me to like go back into an office. But like, do you think it's just because of that?
Nah, I've been working remote since 2017 when I moved up here, started doing remote again. I think for me especially, it's like I remember when I was working for another corporation, and the combination of the corporation and an office was suffocating me. There was sometimes very little to do. Very, very little to do. But we're just expected to be there so that somebody can, you know, so that you can look busy and act busy and ask what we can help with and what we need to get going. And, you know, these, if you're at a startup, you could find something to do, fine. And I would say the culture could be different. My take here is definitely more like corporation side, but, and me personally, it doesn't matter, but. Yeah, but just having the family and stuff. But if you're working at a startup, then like there could be a definite benefit to having a, you know, this kind of like incubator energy going on in person.
What about you, Robbie?
Oh, I have opinions. Coming as recently as yesterday, when I had a 15-hour day before I got 1 hour of free time and then went to bed. Fuck commuting to the office. It's so stupid. Like, I waste 2 hours a day. I could have had 3 hours of free time to do whatever I want to recharge and be a better employee for you the next day and not hate my life. Like, it's so stupid to commute. And like, yeah, I mean, I understand that like a lot of these big corporations have gotten backed into a wall by building huge offices and getting big tax breaks and whatever. And so they got to force everyone to come in now. You should trust your team enough to like, let them decide. Like, if you're being really productive at home, what's the point in coming in? Like, I could even work an extra hour, like, if I wanted to use my free time for that. Like, there's no correlation to going in the office and getting more done. You know, as you were saying, the there are some times that you should be in person. Like, I think you should have a few times a year, do some offsites, do whatever, like get to know your team. Like, there's value in being with real people, but I don't think day-to-day work benefits from being in the same place.
Well, I would argue too that, you know, some of those things, like I said, the culture and whether or not they're used to remote, and like, you know, because like being able to do quick huddles, you know, and being able to like doing pair programming, you know, for new people or when you're just, when there's a hard problem or something, is great. And it's just sometimes, you know, if a company's not used to remote, they don't have those expectations. They don't have those things in place, and they kind of have like this awkward meetup in a stand up. And then like, that's the last time they'll talk to each other unless they need to like specifically meet about something. And you know, it creates an awkwardness of like, you know, I don't know how devs aren't notorious for their social skills. And anyway, you know, and beyond that, you know, some people are just more introverted. So like creating that like expectation that you can kind of just, you know, ping someone for help or, you know, do huddles, do the pair programming thing makes it, you know, like some of the benefits that you would get with in person, not as relevant.
I completely agree about commutes. Like, commutes are the fucking worst thing. I've never lived more than 10 minutes from an in-person office though. So I've actually, like, even though I've worked on site a lot, I've never really had a commute.
You son of a bitch.
Like I purposefully bought an apartment, like, four blocks away.
He said,
away.
Yeah, commutes are the worst. I've never lived more than 10 minutes from it.
Yeah, like, I hate commutes. Like, man, if the choice is between an hour commute and on-site, like, it's not even going to be close. Like, or an hour commute and remote. I'm definitely going remote.
I'll just live on-site.
Google lets you do that now. You got to pay them, but...
At the same time, I have a couple... Like, I actually think on-site is really valuable when you're like new, like entry level, junior level developer. I learned so much, and maybe that was unique to like the team I was on, but I felt like,
but
I
again,
learned
I think,
so much.
I think that
site.
Like, I think that getting, you know, making sure, because juniors, I think especially do need that like sense of community more with their other developers, you know, and you don't want to turn them off to the whole industry. They're very, you know, they're very flighty at that point. They're probably still figuring out if it's the thing they want to do for more years. And, you know, there is a stereotype. We want to make sure that we're not perpetuating that by, you know, logging on, saying our piece and, you know, dipping out and hoping that, throwing them to, you know, to the wolves to see if they figure it out. And I think making sure that you really tend to those junior and some mid-level developers while they're, especially when they're first getting started, just making sure that they feel like they, you know, comfortable with the team.
And like, I think it can be done remotely, but I just feel like it's so much easier to get it right.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely easier. I'm saying, like, that's one thing about remote is you really need, because of that, because it's so much easier on site, is you really need to pay attention to that specific area.
The other thought I've had, so like, boot dev is small, we've got 7 employees right now, is like, I think as a startup, it could be easier to be on site when you're so small, because like, you don't have the communication problems a big company has. Like, you wouldn't spend all day in meetings, but at the same time, I don't want to buy an office. So like, we've just been remote, and I think we're going to be remote forever. So yeah, theory, but I don't even know if it's true. Like, I know
really
that,
though, why would you? Like, there might be a point, like, you're an internet company with internet employees and internet customers.
I know that, like, there's a lot of people in SF that disagree, and they don't, you know, they say it's, you get so much more effectiveness when you're like,
I can't roll my
sub 20 people. But I don't know if it's true. I haven't tried it.
It's just all about how much, like, if you know the things that are beneficial from being in person and that can be problematic from being remote, fucking focus on them. Don't just be like, this is the problem. If only we could do something about it.
I'm glad you're willing to speak your mind on that. Cool. That was it. That's all the questions I've got. Thank you guys so much for coming on. I want to let you guys plug your stuff, though, really quick. Robbie, where can people find you online, your podcast, all that good stuff?
Yeah. Whiskey Web and Whatnot is at whiskey.fm. I am Robbie the Wagner everywhere. Twitter, GitHub, anywhere you want to find me, except for on LinkedIn. But who wants to find me there? So
I've actually been listening to a lot of the episodes recently. They're fantastic. You guys both have very great podcasting voices as well, which is something I'm a little jealous of. And then Travis, yeah, where can people find you?
This is Tech Savvy Travy. You can find me at twitch.tv tech.savvytravi. You can also find me on Zitter at tech.savvytravi. You can also find me in the Crabling Lounge on Discord. It's crabling.org.
What's your handle there?
TechSavvyTravi.
All right.
Remember for a second.
Travi the Wagner. Robbie the Wagner. Thanks for joining me. Talk to you later.
Hey, man. Yeah, thanks.